This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Yep. Hey everybody, this is episode number 51 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
We are back. This time we're going to remember to do our Woman of Excellence.
Yay.
We forgot to do one last week. I felt terrible about that. We were dealing with sound issues and other last-minute troubles, and so I really do apologize for that. Woman of Excellence this week is going to be a young lady known as Susie the Gnat on Twitter. Her real name is Colette, and Susie was a young lady who was at GPDC, but it's my understanding that she was not playing in the main event. And she was one of the people who felt like the lack of coverage was a huge oversight. And so she started doing her own coverage on Twitter. She was taking pictures of all the teams, asking them silly questions, coming up with team names, making them do silly poses. And she really had all eyes on her for, you know, day one and day two of the event. And so she definitely did a really good job of filling that void. And you should just follow her anyways, because she's awesome. Again, that is Susie the Gnat, S-U-Z-Y. Theegnat. We have a new Patreon subscriber, Samuel. Thank you so much for supporting the show. And we also got a new review on iTunes from Original Lady Cat. She gave us 5 stars. Thank you so much for that, too. Grand Prix DC, like we said, was this past weekend. It was a team-sealed event. I believe over 2,000 people were there.
Wow.
Yeah. Big deal, big deal. Very stacked top four. It came down to a team comprised of Matt Nass, Sam Pardee, and Jacob Wilson. The second team was Matt Severa, Justin Cohen, and Mike Haran. Team number three was Owen Turtenwald, William Jensen, and... Duke. we just can forget the other two. It's fine. The third team was Ian Spaulding, Richard Hohen, and Tom Martell. Love Tom Martell. That was the fourth team, actually. I'm sorry. Stacked top four. And this led to a lot of discussion about the lack of coverage. And there were people on both sides of the coin that said, well, limited in general is not really exciting to watch, and that limited viewership is typically down. And so that was the reason why they didn't have coverage for this event. And then you had people that argued that the top four was the reason why you should have coverage, that you know that there are going to be these super teams just battling it out to get to the top, and that that's really fun to watch. And so, you know, which side of the coin do you fall on, Hallie? Like, do you feel that this should have been covered? And if so, why or why not?
I personally would have liked to watch coverage of it. I know there was one point on Sunday morning when I thought, oh, I should turn on coverage. Oh, wait. So that was a little bit awkward. But I do enjoy watching these super teams battle it out. I also really enjoy, you know, the human interest stories, you know, the teams of families and friends who come from all over the country to play at these kinds of things. So I really do enjoy watching coverage, but at the same time, I understand that, you know, like you said, Erin, limited coverage doesn't always appeal to everyone. I know I'm more into limited than most of us on the show, and so I really enjoy watching limited coverage, and I know that's not for everyone. And, you know, another point is that, you know, if the point of showing coverage is to, you know, market the game and to sell cards, we're at kind of an awkward point in the timeline right now, where Wizards is spending a lot of time marketing Shadows over Innistrad. And when you have a tournament that's Oath of the Gatewatch sealed, it's kind of hard to, you know, show that at the same time when you're trying to put all your resources into marketing your new set. So I could understand both sides of the argument.
It does seem a little odd given how much energy they put into promoting Shadows of Innistrad. You know, they built a church at the GP, and
right,
they flew Christine Sprinkle out there, and they're really determined to make that set attractive. And here you have an opportunity to make Oath of the Gatewatch attractive. Not that it's not already,
right,
but what better way to plug it than have it be in so many people's hands and so many good players' hands, and it does seem like a missed opportunity to plug that set.
Yeah, I definitely would have liked to watch coverage. It seems like a lot of people, you know, that I've met or known who want to go to the PT kind of seem to forget that there's a really big, like, limited aspect to it. And I think that there's a lot to be gained from watching, you know, very good players construct their decks or draft or, you know, do sealed. And this is, like, the perfect opportunity to do it, because when you go to the PT as a grinder, you have to be able to be good at constructed and limited. And so I think that covering limited formats in the form of GPs is really important. And I would have liked to have seen, you know, this top four all compete.
It's funny because I was watching RuPaul's Drag Race the other day. I'm sorry, I have to. And there was the new season started, and there's always one queen who's like, I don't know how to sew. And you can't go on RuPaul's Drag Race if you don't know how to sew. And I remember looking at that and going, a queen saying she doesn't know how to sew is like going to the pro tour and saying, I don't draft. You just can't do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's funny how many people I know who want to be on the train and they follow the, you know, the modern metagame so closely and the standard metagame so closely, but then they're like, I don't know what I'm going to do for the draft.
Yeah.
And you're right. That is something that's really overlooked. There was also a lot of talk of increasing the number of team events and possibly even branching out into team constructed events. You know, Chris, is this something that you'd want to do? Like, would you want to play team constructed?
Yeah, that would be fun. You know, I could definitely find some people that would be down with that. So, I mean, it would be interesting because I've never actually like played with a team before. So if they offered team constructed tournaments, I would want to go.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd want to do them. Like, interacting with one opponent is painful, but like three? I'm just like, oh, this is weird. And I did do Team Sealed once. I played at Gen Con with two friends of mine. And I think the other thing that kind of keeps me away from it is I'm very big on chemistry and that I can't just do Two-Headed Giant with just anybody. And I got really lucky my first time playing Team Sealed and that I clicked really well with both of the guys that I played with. And, you know, it's hard enough for me to find one person to do Two-Headed Giant with, much less two other people to do team with. And so I think if you have people that you click with around you, like, you know, Katie and Hallie, you do really well together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that you guys automatically have, you know, partners established there. And I don't think it'd be very hard for you two to find a third if you wanted to do that. But I know that I've played with people who I consider friends, and it's not personal, but we just don't play well together. And so it'd be very difficult for me to find a team. Mm. Katie, I saw you on Twitter the other day, and you had plans to either go to a PP, you were going to go to a PPTQ, yeah?
Yep.
And you were going to play in it or judge in it?
I was going to play it.
You were going to play in it. And it seems like it was just plagued with problems from the get-go.
Oh my god, yes.
What happened?
So, Hastings in Billings, which is a town 2 hours away, decided they were going to run a tournament for this pre-TQ season. And they put an app up on Judge Apps to look for a head judge. And I went and I looked at it. And it said it was sealed in the compensation was decent, and Brooke said he was going to judge it because he's already queued for the RPTQ, and so I was like, okay, well, we can go together. I'll drive, and we'll go do this thing, and it was scheduled to start at 2 p.m., and so, like, the week beforehand, he sends me a text, and he's like, so, I really haven't heard anything from Hastings about this tournament. And apparently their flyer says that it starts at 6 p.m. And I was like, sealed pre-TQ starting at 6 p.m. with a top 8 draft? That sounds miserable. Because I had just taken off that day. I didn't take off the next day off work. And we had the 2-hour drive back. So I was like, well, if it's at 6 p.m., I won't be able to go. And then, you know, now it's the day before, and we're at F&M, and he finally gets a hold of the people, and apparently it's standard, and we're, like, trying to communicate to our Montana Facebook page, like, okay, it's sealed, it's at 2, nope, actually it's sealed, it's at 6, nope, actually it's standard at 6, nope, I think it's standard at 2, and so, like, everybody in Montana is just really confused about what's going on. So we finally nailed down the night before that it was standard at 2, and the entry was $35, and when you entered, you just got 5 packs, and that was your payout. There was no other prizes. So everybody entered and got 5 packs, and then played standard, and then somebody got first and queued. And so
what?
So I was like, Brooke, sorry, I'm not going to go to this thing. But he had other people to go with, so it wasn't bad. But there was a lot of people. It sounded like they would have had a really good turnout for Sealed because in our state, nobody ever really runs it. And so all the people kind of come out of the woodwork for it who never get to play competitive Sealed. And the whole thing just ended up being horribly, horribly disorganized. And Brooke, as the head judge, didn't even know, like, what he was expecting the next day. And it just ended up where it was too confusing. I mean, I didn't have a standard deck. I hadn't tested at all because I was planning on just going and playing Sealed. And so it just seemed like a big stressor to travel out of town for this thing that I wasn't very excited for anymore. And I ended up sending Helen a tweet, and I was just like, this was really poorly organized. I'm pretty disappointed. And her response was like, what do you want me to do with this tweet? And I was like, well, is there going to be any kind of standardization for these things? I mean, not having a start time or an entry fee or a prize structure or a format posted, and it wasn't even listed on the Wizards site as being an event, so we didn't even know if they had signed up correctly. Like, we didn't know if we traveled there, would we actually get the invite for winning, or were they just calling it a PPTQ without having gone through the proper avenues? And she really didn't have a response to that. She basically just said we could file a complaint with Hastings, but Eric Cias from the Spikes podcast also commented on it and was like, we just got screwed over by our Hastings, too, because we were going to do Sealed, and apparently they don't have enough product for people. So,
wow.
Yeah, I was really disappointed because I had taken the day off work to be able to do this event, and the event just turned into a shit show. It's just horribly run. Or not run by Brooke, but by the TO.
Now, what is the Hastings? Because I'm not familiar.
Oh.
Yeah, we don't have that.
We don't have that either.
Wow.
Sorry. Hashtag just Montana things? Like,
I don't think so. It's like a big chain store. It's a book, video game, and movie, like, entertainment store.
Like a Barnes and Noble?
Like a Newbery Comics?
I don't know what Newbery Comics is. It's kind of like...
That's an East Coast
thing. Yeah, that's a Boston thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Barnes and Noble, but with a little bit more emphasis on, like... I mean, they have, like, Funko Pops and, like, kind of, I don't know, random things like that as well. Hmm. And apparently it's kind of awkward because they just got bought by Hasbro as a company. And I was like, well, they should learn how to run Magic tournaments then because this is, like, unacceptable.
Huh. Well, it sounds like you had enough, you know, ammo for a complaint. Like you said, there was just so much information that was not set in stone. Like, you didn't even know what the format was. You didn't know what the time was. And it wasn't like the time was off by, like, an hour. It was, like, morning to late afternoon. And that's a deal breaker for some people. And I'm kind of surprised. Like, I saw that Helen had responded to you, and I was kind of surprised because normally, at the very least, she'll give you, like, an email address, or she'll give you, like, a Twitter account to tweet at or something. And I was kind of surprised that she was just like, meh, because I was like, this seems... And then when Eric chimed in and said that his Hastings also was not going very well, I was like, that's two stores of the same chain that's not providing a good event, that's not providing good service. And to me, that would be a red flag that you might want to, you know, act on that. And so, you know, I wonder what we can do going forward to prevent... Have you experienced this with other stores?
The Hastings in our town hasn't tried to run any competitive events. I know that they have an F&M that usually gets, like, 6 to 8 people. It's just, like, a very casual, kind of newer player crowd than our local game store. But I think the issue is that, you know, they started running F&Ms at all these stores, and they're run by store employees, and that doesn't, like, they don't necessarily know anything about Magic or F&M or what this whole thing is. They're just like, hey, you employee that works on Friday nights, you're going to go to the back of the store and hang out with these people who are going to play this game. And I don't even know if they show them how to use the software, or, like, I don't really know the whole setup that they have going on, but Brooke said the major part that was wrong with this Hastings and the other town was that none of them really knew anything about magic. And so it wasn't that they were trying to, like, screw anyone over. They were just, you know, ignorant to the way tournaments are run. And they ended up having 9 people, which I think is the smallest.
For a PPTQ.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah. Because so many people were like, I don't know if I want to even try. They were in the same boat as me, but it sounded like they would have had 30 to 40 if it had just been sealed at 2 p.m. like everybody thought for, you know, months in advance.
Do you think that this is a symptom of a larger problem with the PPTQs? Because we've heard a lot of feedback on it, and it sounds like they're not quite, the PPTQ system is not quite where people want it to be yet. Like, there's still some kinks in it. And, you know, you brought up some good points. You know, there are stores that think because they can host an F&M that they're ready to host a PPTQ. They don't necessarily have the space for it or the staff for it, but damn it, they're going to do it. And, you know, do you think that this kind of ties into that? That, you know, if we were under the old PTQ system, that this wouldn't be an issue, that there would be more enforcement and higher standards?
I do. I think the old PTQ system where, I mean, they had very strict guidelines and everything was very regulated. And, like, if you didn't do it right once, you might not get a PTQ again, because there was only a certain allotment of them. And I just feel like the tournaments were always, just in general, much better run and, you know, had adequate staff and room and space and stores that knew how to run a tournament and good prize structures. And it just seems like now it's just willy-nilly, like you show up to this one and it'll be a free entry fee with no prizes except the invite, or you show up to this one and it's like $50 and prizes only to first and second or whatever. And it's just like, I feel like there needs to be some regulation in so people know what to expect, because if you're going to a tournament that's titled a PPTQ, I think that that should be kind of a set in stone, like, you know what you're gonna get. And you know what kind of experience you're going to have.
Hallie, you had mentioned, you know, you're a frequent PPTQ grinder. You mm-hmm. know, you're definitely trying to get on the train. And you had mentioned that you've also experienced some issues. Not, it might not be with the system or with the players, but I know that you've been kind of unhappy lately as well.
Yeah, so I played in a PPTQ this weekend. It was very well run, I will say that. I went to Mox Boarding House in Bellevue, and it was a very well run event. It was 6 rounds. We had a pretty good turnout of 58 players. I was not fortunate enough to make the top 8, but my friend Carolyn did. Carolyn had sent us a listener question a couple weeks ago, and, you know, she's a friend of the show. She's really awesome. And she and a couple of her friends came down from Vancouver to play in the PPTQ, so I was really glad that, you know, at least I got to hang out with her for a day. But my PPTQ didn't really... Sorry, I tried to say all those syllables. It's really hard. I'm just going to start saying pre-TQ like Katie because it's so much easier. It was kind of stressful. I was 3-1 in the first... 4 rounds. I had some really great games against some rogue decks. I had a really close game against a Tarka Red that I happened to pull out. And then I played against a rally player who didn't realize that he could kill me, and I ended up drawing with him. And it was definitely frustrating, and it definitely messed up, like, my tiebreakers for making top 8. And I've been noticing that I've been drawing a lot this season. And I consider myself a pretty... brisk, not brisk necessarily, but I consider myself a player who plays at an adequate pace, and I feel like I draw in like 75% of tournaments that I play. And this may have to do with the format itself. I mean, we've noticed going to standard GPs that the rounds can take a very long time, and that's because people are playing these 4-color mid-range decks where you spend quite a bit of time just shuffling and fetching and, you know, trying to organize your mana. But I think this is especially an issue at the PPTQ level because there are so many players who aren't used to playing at a competitive level who will come and play in a PPTQ, and they don't realize that they have to play at a certain pace, and it just kind of becomes a problem. I do see a lot of people drawing, more people drawing than I've seen in previous seasons or at PTQs when I used to play at PTQs. And I think it's definitely an issue. I hope that it will go away as the format shifts, because I imagine when mana gets... I don't think we'll be able to play 3 and 4 color decks in Shadows over Innistrad Standard. So I'm hoping that the lack of fetching will take this down a couple notches, but it is definitely something that I think needs to be addressed. I know slow play is really subjective, but I think judges at the PPTQ level need to be on the lookout for it.
Is there a way to, and I'm not saying that you're coming off this way, Hallie, you know, is there a way to address that without sounding elitist? Because it sounds like it could easily be misconstrued as you're saying, or anybody is saying, you know, I'm grinding, I'm serious, I'm trying to get on the train. And, you know, because, you know, we've talked about stores, the standard for stores kind of feeling like it's gone down, where any store that hosts an FNM feels like they can host a PPTQ. And it does feel like you're also seeing that from the players, where you're seeing people who are going, I can go to FNM, so I'm therefore I'm going to go to a PPTQ. You know, whereas mm-hmm. before, when it was just a PTQ, you wanted some experience under your belt, and so it feels like those events are also attracting a more casual player. And is there a way to address that without making it sound that way? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally understand that. And like I said, I think it definitely. The fact that we have fetch lands in the format is definitely a part of it. I'm not saying it's all on the players. Mm-hmm. But I do think that, I don't know, I'm hoping that as more of these players keep going to more PPTQs, it will definitely help, at least. Like, getting more repetitions in with their decks will help. Or, you know, if judges step up and give more slow play warnings, that will help. So I'm hoping that this problem goes away soon.
Yeah, because, you know, you definitely don't feel like, you know, the option is always there to call a judge, but you don't want to be, I understand that feeling of I don't want to be mean, I don't want to be a jerk about it, but you've got to play faster. And that's one of those really subjective issues that I feel like people are the most hesitant to call a judge over, because you're just like, oh, this is, you know, this is kind of subjective, and they maybe don't know any better, or maybe it's just me, and, you know, it does feel like an awkward position to be in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pre-TQs have just been attracting so many new players. And I've kind of started saying in my head judge announcements at the beginning, like, this is kind of a slow format, so if everybody can try and play at, you know, an adequate pace, you should be able to complete 3 games in 50 minutes. And I think that kind of gets the point across, like, if I come over and I'm like, hey, I need you to make a play or play a little bit faster, I hope that it's not scary for new players, but I know it probably is, just because anytime a judge talks to you as a new player, it's kind of intimidating. Mm-hmm. But I think that if the whole dynamic of pre-TQs just changes a little bit, and everybody's kind of on the same page of, yeah, we need to play a little bit faster, I think that's the best way for, you know, to get that to happen. I think it has to come from both players and judges.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good way to fix that. You know, also too, I think, you know, it's kind of a ground-up philosophy where if we treat the PPTQs as a more serious event, if we do increase the standards for the event, that should in turn increase the standards for the players as well. Mm-hmm. You know, but when the players see that the events are being handled so casually, they might feel more inclined to be more lax and be like, oh, it's just a PPTQ. And it's like, no, you need to be treating this like a PTQ. Like, this is a serious business event, and you need to bring your A game. And I feel like if we just treat the event better, then the play will be better. That's my theory, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shadows over Innistrad spoilers have started, and we don't normally talk about specific cards because we try to save that for when the whole set is spoiled, but there was some discussion that came out from these two cards that I really wanted to address with you guys. And the first card that we saw spoiled today was called Anguished Unmaking. It is some would say a better version of Utter End. It costs 1 colorless, a white and a black. It's an instant, and you can exile target nonland permanent, and you lose 3 life. And the card basically spoils a bit of the plotline of Shadows for us and says that Sorin's going to be dealing with Avacyn in some form. That Avacyn has gone loca, and Sorin's just like, you gots to go. And so Sorin makes her disappear, and they stress the word forever in the flavor text. So he's going to be dealing with Avacyn and end her forever. And we also got a glimpse of Nahiri. Nahiri is back. She's also mad as hell. She's not going to take it anymore. you see her destroying a Markov Manor behind her. She blows it to smithereens. She's looking very badass. She's very Boros. And these two cards kind of brought up some discussion about how Wizards treats their female characters. And the term fridging came about, which I think comes from the comic book world. Mm-hmm. And somebody it had does. Made a tweet of, well, why do you think we don't see very many female players when you keep treating your female characters this way? You know, we have Elsbeth that has her love interest, and she goes for love, and then she gets stabbed by Hilliard, and then she's in Tartarus or Asphodel, and then Daxos comes back and she's in the underworld and they do her really dirty. And now they have Avacyn, who starts off this angel of purity. They make her go batshit, and now they take her out. And now we have Nahiri. Nahiri's also upset, and Nahiri's destroying shit. And, you know, there was an argument for, we're not really giving these female characters their due diligence. And, you know, Hallie, do you agree with that? Like, do you look at the lore of these characters, and does it kind of disappoint you, or do you see their point?
I mean, I should preface this by saying that I don't read a lot of lore. I actually had to research some lore today in preparation for this discussion, because I just started playing at the tail end of Innistrad Block, and I didn't know anything about Avacyn. So I had one of my friends tell me, like, oh yeah, she was created by Sorin in order to keep the Innistrad ecosystem in balance so his vampires wouldn't eat all the humans, and then the humans would disappear, and his vampires would disappear, and everything would be terrible. So anyway, with all that said, I don't know. I think, I mean, I was disappointed when Elsbeth was killed off, too. I thought she was pretty cool. But I don't know. I think that, at least in Nahiri's case, I think from what I know of her, she has a right to be as angry as she is. It sounds like Sorin and Ugin kind of disappointed her by letting the Eldrazi get out and sort of ravage her plane, and now her plane has been destroyed and she's angry and she wants vengeance. Like, I don't think that's so misplaced or that that's necessarily a bad quality. I think that's very human, in fact, to be that angry about, you know, having your home destroyed. I mean, in the case of Avacyn, I mean, from what I know of her, she was just kind of, like, created to, you know, take care of the plane, and not very much was known about her. She wasn't, like, a relatable character, but she's apparently gone crazy now, and I don't know. I'm not super invested in that storyline, so I can't really speak to that. What I can say is that we have been seeing a lot more female characters in the storylines in general. Like, I thought Cons did a really great job of showcasing strong female characters, and I've seen a lot more strong female characters in the, you know, 3.5 years that I've been playing the game. And I don't know, I don't feel like too many characters have been killed off, or at least I don't feel like we're having, like, a women in refrigerators kind of thing here. I think we're just seeing maybe not the widest showcase of, you know, the emotions that women can feel and how they can react to certain situations, and maybe we could see more of that in the future.
Chris, what do you think about this? Like, do you think that they're doing the female characters justice, or do you think that they could do better?
I think what they're doing is fine. I mean, they are still showing Avacyn and Nahiri, I think, as, you know, strong female characters that are just going through some shit, to say the least. I do not feel, as a comic book dork, that they suffer from women in refrigerator syndrome, because women in refrigerators basically harkens back to killing off or depowering female characters in comic books in order to advance a male storyline. And I don't think that that's the case here, because, I mean, there's still so many characters at the forefront. It's not just about Sorin. Like, there's other, you know, characters involved. So I'm interested to see what happens. I should also dive into more lore, because I kind of don't. But this actually kind of makes me want to, like, seeing, you know, some of the cards now, and seeing the new Nahiri and everything, and Avacyn all, like, pissed off and undead looking and crazy and shit. So yeah, I don't know. But I don't think that it suffers from women in refrigerator syndrome at all.
Katie, do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, we all know that I am not a Vorthos. I actually didn't even know Nahiri existed until she came out today. But my first thought when I saw her was, like, she kind of looks badass, and she kind of looks like she just got out of, like, a straight-up movie scene where she's, like, walking away from, like, the car crash explosion or whatever. But I was very sad when Elsbeth died just because I like Elsbeth a lot. But before you had, like, sent out topics for us to discuss and this was on it, I didn't realize, I guess, that people felt this way. I guess I don't feel this way. I like that they are having a lot of prominent female characters. I do agree with Hallie that the range of what emotions they're expressing and what they're doing in the storylines could be expanded, but I guess I don't think they're in any kind of fridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's important to... I remember seeing this article on Twitter. I didn't actually click on it, but it said... It came out right around the time of Jessica Jones, and it said why it's important to have flawed female characters. And, you know, we sometimes give flack for having female protagonists be too perfect and that they don't have any flaws, and why it's so important to have some female characters with a little stank on them. And, you know, I remember when Nyssa kind of got a little dumb down a little bit. You know, when we first saw Nyssa, she had some bite to her. She was a little xenophobic. She was not perfect. And then the retcon happened and she sort of became this wide-eyed, it's all about Ashaya kind of Nyssa. And people were like, can we have, like, flawed Nyssa back? Because she was way more interesting. And, you know, I think the same is true for characters like Chandra and Liliana. And I think that's why a lot of people like those characters more, is because Chandra is a pistol. You know, Liliana is such a badass and just doesn't care and is kind of sultry compared to Nyssa, who's sort of, you know, I just want to ride a tree and I just want to plant some seeds. And people aren't interested in that. You know, they want to see some flaws. And, you know, I think to see Avacyn, and people are fascinated by Avacyn. People want to know. That was the talk of GP Detroit. Like, you know, people who were watching it all go down, everybody was talking about, why did this happen? What happened here? And that says a lot about a character when they care about that kind of thing. You know, they want to see the fall from grace. They want to know what happened. Same thing with Nahiri. All I saw was, why is she so mad at Soren? People want to know. And I feel like that says a lot about your characters when people care about them. I think if people saw Anguish Unmaking and were like, well, bye. You know, there was no... But everybody I saw was really upset about this card. They were like, "What? Why would he do this? Like, why are you killing her?" And I think that that means you're doing a good job with the characters when people care about what happens to them. Mm-hmm. I think if people saw this card and if people saw Nahiri and were like, that's nice, girl. Your ultimate's really cool. We're not really caring about any of that. No, but people want to follow this story. And I think it's really important that we see women who aren't necessarily always doing the right thing or are making poor choices. I think that's just as important as having women who make all the right choices.
Mm-hmm. Because it's more realistic.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I even said that about Star Wars. Like, I was one of the few people who didn't like the new Star Wars. I know. I'm a jerk. But one of the reasons I didn't like it was because I couldn't relate to Rey. Like, I just didn't. Like, I was just like, you're a nice girl. Like, you're doing good work. Like, good for you. But I was there for Phasma. I wanted to see Phasma. Like, I wanted to see this tall Amazon bad bitch. Like, that's what I was here for. And I just don't relate to characters like that. And so, you know, when I go see a movie like Suicide Squad, I want to see Enchantress. I want to see Harley Quinn. I'm not interested in the heroines. I relate to the villains, the flawed female characters. And so I think if we are going to give women this experience, we need to cover all of our bases. Our listener question this week, send us your questions at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. This question came to us from Shane. And Shane says, hello, everyone. Been listening to The Girlfriend Bracket just recently, and I love it. It's great for the ride to work every morning. My question is, how does one become better at magic? My friends and I have been attending more tournaments in the past couple years, stuff like IQs and big local tournaments and SCG Opens when they are in town. They are all putting up great results, but I have yet to top 8 anything. Any help on how to improve my game? Thank you, Shane.
This is a really tough question to answer because I'm trying to get better at magic too.
But it sounds so simple. Like, I remember when I first saw the email, I was like, oh, well, just eat fruits and nuts and grass and drink water and go. And it's like, no, this is a really tough question.
No, I feel like it's very easy to get to, like, a competent level, but becoming really great at magic is all about, like, little tiny things you can do to improve your play. I think one of the best things you can do, and this is, you know, something that people say all the time, but playing against better players and picking better players' brains about what they're thinking, is a really great way to improve. If your friends are seeing a lot of success, talk to your friends about, you know, what's working with them. If you don't test with them regularly, start testing with them regularly and sort of, you know, turn everything into a conversation. I know there are a number of like little things that I'm working on in order to get better at magic. I have a Fearless Magical Inventory that I'm just sort of making a running tally of on my blog. You could do one of those. Like, thinking about ways that you can improve is definitely great for your game. But one thing that I'm actively trying to work on is seeing the game in a more of a big picture kind of way, and thinking about, you know, how I want the game to play out instead of just making little micro decisions every turn, and just thinking about, you know, what's my role in the game, how am I going to win, and, you know, what my opponent's thinking. So those are all the little things that are percolating in my brain, but I'm sure there are lots of other ways to improve as well.
I think that expanding your reach of players to pick brains of is really important. Like, it's easy to get in with your group of friends and they all kind of think, you know, this way about magic, but finding people outside of that group is important. Like, I saw Hallie posted in Ladies on the Grind today, and or maybe it was yesterday, but she had posted a picture of a deck and was like, does anybody have any recommendations for me? And that's, you know, that's not her close friend group and it's not the people she tests with, but it's just a wider variety of people to get input from, because everybody has a different play style and everybody can see pros and cons of cards that maybe you can't see, or, you know, streaming and getting feedback from your viewers can be good too. But I think an important thing for getting better at Magic is emotionally disconnecting yourself from the game. Like, a lot of people, you play your game, a friend is watching, and then they're like, hey, why did you do this on X turn? And you see a lot of people who kind of flare up at that and get defensive. And I think being able to disconnect your emotions from your play is really important to being able to get better, because you have to be able to critically examine, you know, all the plays that you're making without having that be like a personal attack on you. And you see it a lot. Like, somebody's like, why are you playing that card? And somebody's like, well, because I like it and because it's good and because this and this and this. And it's like, well, why am I playing this card? You know, you should have a good sound reason. And if you don't, then maybe it's not the best card to be playing. So I think that being able to do that and being able to get a wider variety of opinions on your magic play and your decks and everything, I think both of those can help you to become better.
Well, now I'm learning things from you guys. What the
fuck? That's what we're here for.
Yeah, because I'm actually trying to figure this out myself right now. I didn't do so hot at Detroit, and I think part of the reason why was because I got too in my head and too emotionally invested in wanting to do well. And I should have just stuck with what I normally do, which is try not to take it too seriously. Like, try to take it seriously enough that we're here, we're going to play, but don't put too much pressure on yourself, because then my anxiety flies out of control. And then I'm just like worried about, what are they all going to say? They're judging me with their eyes now because I made this mistake. And, you know, and I think that, at least for me, in my experience, trying not to put so much pressure on myself to do well and just kind of take everything like one step at a time has been better for me, because when I've done that, I have performed better, because I haven't been all in my head about like, you have to do this, you don't have to do shit, you know, you want to play the game, do you want to be better? Sure. One thing I'm going to start doing hopefully sooner rather than later is be able to run a gauntlet with friends, with a bunch of different decks at our disposal. From what I understand, I think our LGS even has like proxy decks available that we can run gauntlets with. So if so, that's definitely something that I want to take advantage of. And I am fortunate that I do have a large group of friends and other friends who live out of state who are, you know, more proficient in perhaps limited than I am. I'm better and constructed that I can try to bounce ideas off of. And so I think it helps to have a variety of different resources that you can go to. But at the end of the day, stay true to yourself and do what you think is right for you.
Yeah, the thing I found that helped me the most was really narrowing my focus. You know, I was trying to play so many formats and so many different decks that I wasn't becoming good at the one I really wanted to, where it was like, oh, I'm going to play Jund and Modern, and I'm going to play, you know, this in Standard, I'm going to try Enchantress and Legacy, and I was going to every PPTQ, even when I didn't like the format, and I was going to pre-releases and hating them, and I was just doing so many things, and I felt like my attention was being divided so many different ways that I was trying to, you know, I was learning how to play this deck, but the lessons that I learned from playing that deck were distracting me from the other deck. Do you get what I'm trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I was just doing things to do them, and then my brain was getting all muddled. And for me, I really just kind of had to turn off the white noise, where it's like, I know that Standard is not my jam. Like, Standard's just not my – Standard and Sealed are not my priorities. And so I knew that I really wanted to get better at Modern. And so when there was a Standard PPTQ, even though it's local to me and even though we don't get very many events, I just stopped going. You know, I was going to events a lot of times because they were just nearby, even though I hated the format, I hated my deck. It just didn't make any sense to me. And so when I only went to events that I really cared about, I felt like I did better at them. And I stopped going to pre-releases because I just don't really get anything out of them. And I did kind of narrow my focus a little bit. And when I found that I did that, and then when I achieved the goals that I wanted to in that desired format or with that desired deck, then I would go, okay, well, you guys are going to a Standard GP. I've got a little bit of, you know, capacity in my brain to learn Standard now. But, you know, I made sure that my primary focus, my primary deck, I had learned as much as I could with that before I started doing other things. And that was a really big thing for me. I also noticed that, kind of like Chris, I started doing better when I just kind of stopped caring. You know, like, I was going into every event thinking I was Beyonce. Like, you are the baddest bitch here, and you're going to own all these people. And that was my problem, though, is I just went into these events thinking that I was better than everybody and thinking that I had the best deck in the room. And I think that that's fine to a certain degree, but the level that I took it to was just plain unhealthy. And so it's a matter of extremes. It's not that I don't give a crap at all, but I've managed to find that sweet spot of, eh. Like, you know, sometimes you just get there, you know? I played Blue-White Eldrazi 5 times at GP Detroit. I couldn't help that. It was just like, well, that's variance for you, you know? Sometimes they're going to have that Eye of Ugin 3 Eldrazi hand. What can I really do about that? And, you know, I also found with my posture, kind of getting a little lower in my chair. I used to sit really uptight and, you know, stick straight and brr. And when I kind of slouched a little bit, it was like, fucking bring it. Like, just kind of, I felt like I did better when I loosened up a little bit. So for me personally, not, like I said, not lowering my expectations, but just being more reasonable about them really helped me do better. And I did day two a GP because of that. And I did cash a GPT because of that. And I feel like I've been seeing results because of those things. Should we share our announcement?
Yes.
I told you guys before we recorded.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So we received an email today from a young man who goes by the name of David Whitfield. David Whitfield is an associate community manager for Wizards of the Coast, and specifically he works with Magic Online. And David sent us an email inviting us, the girlfriend bracket, to participate in the Streamer Showdown.
Woo!
It's a big deal. If you're not familiar with what that is, they're basically events that highlight the latest set. And sometimes I think they also do them for flashback drafts as well. But there is one happening this week for Oath of the Gatewatch. I don't know if we're going to be able to make that one, but there's also one happening in April for the Shadows Over Innistrad, and we've been invited to that too. So it looks like you're going to be seeing us on Twitch, and the Mothership is going to plug us, and we'll be able to play with people like Gabby and Kenji and Marshall and Mrs. Mulligan. And this is a really big opportunity for us, so we couldn't be more excited.
Yes. Woo! For sure.
I am much excited.
Yeah, it's going to be a really good time. So hopefully we can make this Thursday work. If we can't, that's fine. We can spend time prepping for April 21st, and you guys will get to see us soon. So this is a very big deal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all, and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can find me on twitch.tv/HalCanSan. And you can find my writing here on Gathering Magic.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or at twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG. Or by email, katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTEHKRIZ@gmail.com. And my Snapchat is Cryptic Command with K's.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalAstrus. That's OriginalOestrus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can find us on Twitch at twitch.tv/the GF Bracket. And you can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.